Are you ready to get iconic with CCR? Christy Carlson Romano here, and on this pod, I'll be peeling back the curtain on my life like never before. Get ready, because I'm going to be sharing all things fame, fortune, beauty, relationships, and more. So go grab your bestie and tune in each week, because your iconic big sis is here to bring you unfiltered realness. Trust me, every juicy moment is one you won't want to miss.
Hi, I'm Ashley Flowers, creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. Every Monday, me and my best friend Britt break down a new case, but not in the way you've heard before, and not the cases you've heard before. You'll hear stories on Crime Junkie that haven't been told anywhere else. I'll tell you what you can do to help victims and their families get justice. Join us for new episodes of Crime Junkie every Monday, already waiting for you by searching for Crime Junkie wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is a Podco original.
This is Pretty Little Liars True Crime with Tamin Sursok, a.k.a. Jenna Marshall.
And me, Lindsay Shaw, a.k.a. Paige McCullers. Join us as we delve into the twisted secrets of Aria, Spencer, Hannah, Emily, and the mysterious town of Rosewood.
In every episode, we feature Joseph Scott Morgan, a real-life detective and private investigator, where we together dissect the jaw-dropping plot twists and never-ending drama that made Pretty Little Liars the guilty pleasure you couldn't look away from.
Now go grab your black hoodie and strap in, because your journey's about to begin.
As far as like the way that Shay and I interacted with it, it was very like not awkward at all. Mm-hmm. It was just like
easier to kiss a girl than
so
a guy.
So much easier
on
to
set.
Kiss a girl. Yeah, it's it really is. There's a lot of estrogen on our set. It was all females, right?
Yeah.
All syncing up at the same time, mm-hmm. doing all those fun yep. things that women do.
And everyone thinks that everyone got on. I didn't have any disagreements with anyone, really. But behind the scenes, not everyone got on.
When I was, you know, oh my God, 13 and had like a nice, great 13-year-old metabolism, sure, I was a smaller size in my jeans. And there was a jean comparison size where somebody said to me, oh my gosh, well, you know that, you know, that this actress is a certain size, like you're smaller than her in your jean sizes. And it was like something I should be proud of. And that always stuck with me. I think it ruined a lot of career opportunities, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I think that there's a lot of things that I didn't do, certain things that I just...
Welcome back to the Pretty Little Podcast,
where we recap episodes of Pretty Little Liars with a true crime element at the end.
Ooh,
and we
Joseph
talk
Scott
about
Morgan.
Woo! We talk about what it would be like if those crimes in Pretty Little Liars actually happened in today's life in the world right now, and how we would know
when
how to solve a crime.
When they happen. Oof. We have Sasha Peterson.
Most people do, and that's totally fine.
You were 13 on Pretty Little Liars, or 14?
I was 12 when I did the pilot, 13 when 12. We shot the first season, yeah.
Lindsay and I were just...
Girl.
Back then...
Girl.
We were okay with it, but I don't think I'm okay with it now.
Hey, you...
That's because you've got a 10-year-old, though. I think that's probably... Is that part of it?
And also, well, I think it's because you were playing older, so that's fine. But as an actual 12-year-old... You were so sexualized.
So sexualized.
When you watch it back and knowing that you were 12, I don't think, I mean, I couldn't imagine anyone else as that part, but I don't like that you were 12. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
And
fair
look,
enough.
Like you have a ferocious sensibility on this show anyway, like as the character, you know, just a big underlying undertone of who you are is this... just like strong sexual presence as well. And like, you bring the fire, the sauciness, the this, the that to it. And, you do it so well that I just can't get over that you were a preteen when you were doing that.
I'm terrible at taking compliments. So I'm going to just look
yeah,
really uncomfortable
no,
every time you
it's,
say
it's
something
nice yeah.
about no. me, but I appreciate that.
Also, my favorite thing, I think this was actually in one of the later episodes it's when you're screaming at Toby about,
Keegan has a whole story about that
oh
scene.
My gosh. And you, I've never seen, you do this presentation of it that I felt it in my chair.
That yeah. was the first time, I'm sure we had met briefly before, but that scene was the first time that Keegan and I had like interacted in a scene before, merely, other than maybe like the table read, right? And he said he was scared. He didn't know how old I was. And then also he's like, he said he was really scared.
It was his first job.
It was his first job. And then there's just this like little girl yelling at him.
Yeah.
His face though, it sold the moment so well because he truly is like
with
you
that
can
weird
see
hairstyle that they
Oh my goodness.
He is totally in the palm of your hand. And you're just like, I don't even see the acting on the page. Like, it is vicious, like the way you do it. And like more power to you, but your character makes me feel something. Like,
that's great.
Very much.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear that. It was so fun.
Yeah. How did it feel when, do you remember being that young on the show and tackling such like pretty adult themes? Or were you so young that it kind of just went over your head? And then maybe as you've gotten older, you think, ooh, I was too young to process all that.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
It feels weird to reference myself like this, but I feel like I'm a little bit of an enigma.
Mm.
And I say that because if you take who I was associating with at that age, all of my friends were older. Mm. All of my friends were at least 5 years older than me predominantly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So I think I was an only child. I got into the industry when I was around three, mm-hmm. three and a half. I grew up around crew and the environment, and it was intoxicating in the best way. Like, I loved being on set.
Mm.
I loved being around adults. Mm. I didn't connect with kids my own age.
Mm-hmm.
I was homeschooled. Wow. I had really, really great, solid friends around me that were not in the industry, but they were older.
Mm. Yeah.
I was going to high school dances. I was dating. I didn't feel out of place.
Mm.
So if you take another 12-year-old... Mm-hmm. side by side, it might have been very different, but I would never have connected with somebody else my age anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Do I think that that is how it should be? Maybe not.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I think it was one of it's a hard thing because like I don't feel like I was ever taken advantage of on Pretty Little Liars.
No.
I loved our crew. Like they were incredible. They treated me and protected me mm-hmm. so well.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that the content was? I mean, Allison was sexualized. That is the character. It was in the book.
Yeah.
Should they have gotten an 18-year-old to play that? We can debate about that all day. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's all about how it's done and making sure that whatever child is playing that role is okay.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about someone. I've got a 10-year-old, almost 11, and I can't even fathom her understanding of, she knows what sex is. We've had the birds and the bees talk, but to actually understand the concept of sex and dating and drugs and affairs, and they, you know, on the show we're talking about body image and all those things. I don't know, maybe I'm just not smart enough to see that she probably does think about these things, but I can't even fathom her even having that full understanding of what that is.
Right. I don't think most 12-year-olds.
I was going to say, I don't, that's why I'm saying like the enigma side, or like the very, like in the majority of things that I have done in my life. And this is not like a woohoo, go me.
Yeah.
It's just like,
I hope it is.
I more so just mean that the things that I have done have always been ahead of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so it's a hard comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's not a bad thing or a good thing I highly doubt your daughter understands what I understood at 10, but it's also environment.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were dancers. I was around adults. I traveled with them. Mm-hmm. I understood concepts maybe before I should have. And then as you get older, of course you understand those things in different ways and it's you dive deeper into it and like you grasp maybe what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
But I,
did you get to be a kid without ever feeling like all that extra responsibility?
Yeah. Like I didn't play sports because if I was, I was always working. So like if I played sports and I got injured, it would have been against my contract. So like I couldn't join a, you know, a sports team. I couldn't like go and play club, anything. Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't really, but that was okay for me because it's what I wanted, right? And then you separate, okay, well, what you wanted at a 12, as a 12-year-old versus what you would have maybe wanted for yourself as an adult for your childhood is interesting. Like, I would have loved to have played sports.
Right.
However.
Which sport?
I don't know. I played Ultimate Frisbee. My poor parents. Like, no, no, seriously.
The sport I want to play is
my
Frisbee.
My poor parents. I was such a fucking good kid. Can we swear on this?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I was such a good kid. I was such a good teenager. I'm going to pat
myself on the head.
I could have been, I could have been.
I mean.
You've got it
for
together.
Who you were, what you were exposed to. You were Drew Barrymore.
Well, I mean,
and you come out this like
without all that,
this
all the
like amazing baking, beautiful.
There's still time, right?
Yeah. No,
there's
no.
Still maybe your 30s.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, but my like retaliation for not being able to do certain things. Ultimate Frisbee is one of them. I was not allowed to play Ultimate Frisbee, and I would get a friend to pick me up, and we'd be going to the mall or whatever, and I would go and play Ultimate Frisbee. Isn't that so sad?
You're like, this is rebellion.
It is so sad. Yeah. I like, I bought cleats with cash so that my, they didn't know. Like that is how, so sad.
But you don't but miss like what you don't know, right?
Exactly. It's one of those things where like, would I have rather have been working? Yes. Because I love it so much.
Yeah.
It, I never felt forced to be in the industry. And I will give that to my parents. It was, ironically, looking back at it, it was something that I couldn't have gotten out of, but they were sweet about it. That they they always told me, like, you know, if you wake up tomorrow and you don't want to do this anymore, then we're done with acting.
But you were
going back in it, I'm like, I was fucking under contract. I couldn't have.
You can't.
But it was a cute open cage mindset. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Now that you have a beautiful baby son, he's 3 and a half, you were saying.
Yeah.
What? So, I mean, he's as old as you were when you started.
Wow. That's a trip.
Right.
So that is interesting when I look at him and compare, like, you know, I was being put in a room for commercial auditions at his age. That he is so, I mean, I could talk about him forever, as I know that you can talk about your kids forever too. He is so like lively and happy. Like he is such a happy kid. If he cries, you know, something is like really wrong. And he just wants to say hi to everybody. He is so social. He has no concept of stranger danger. We're trying to navigate how to like introduce that to him without like breaking his heart. Cause he just wants to be, he wants to hug everybody. He wants high fives. Like
Lindsay doesn't
wants
know about
shares
stranger
his
danger
toys.
Either. She's like, I like
I mean,
you.
Yes, he is, if you watch Bluey, cause I'm sure you have. Yes. He is the space invader.
Yeah,
he is literally a space invader. He just is attached to you, and I'm like, you gotta ask people if you want, if you can hug them. You know, like you gotta. He just
gets in their orbit. I love it.
He's got so much confidence.
Oh,
it's crazy.
I'm gonna say, tell you a little secret. I've never seen an episode of Bluey.
Really?
And my kids watch it almost every day. Hey, well, I'm a bad mom.
You're not a bad mom. You're not a bad mom.
I really dislike. I don't think a lot of parents say this. I don't love. How do I say this? I love my kids. I love traveling with my kids. I love doing things that I love to do with my kids. I find playing with my kids quite monotonous.
I get that.
It makes me sort of feel depressed. Like, and a lot of moms talk, and they're like, oh God, thank goodness you've said that. Because playing with your kids, it seems fun for the first 5 minutes, but it just goes on. And then they won't stop. And then it's 3 hours of fucking pretending to be Bluey. I can't. I can't do it.
I love that. I love that you said it. Because, no, it is an honest thing, right? And I resonate with that to a degree. Like, there are games that I prefer. My thing right now is going outside. And I'm so happy that my husband is willing to do that. Because... I don't know what it is, but I'm like, I don't fucking want to play in the sandbox. I really, it is the last
thing
that
swing,
I wanted to.
It's like, are you kidding me? I used to have to like just get the gravity to move myself.
Like, right. I know. It's like,
who used to sit and when push I used to swing? When I used to swing back in the day, back I just used day. To move my legs up and down and make
I
them.
Wasn't allowed on swings. I'm just kidding.
Oh, I no, was allowed I bet, on swings.
It's like, yeah, I'm
no,
acting.
I was allowed on swings. Yeah, it's interesting. The playing with your kid thing is interesting. It's fun for that. When they're doing new things, it's like exciting and like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you did that. Now it's not that I don't like playing with them because I do. It's just specific games. I try and avoid the ones that I don't like at all costs, which is not
the sandbox.
Great. Sandbox is one of them. Sandbox. It's yeah. so cute. I'm like that weird person that like watches him from the window.
Like it's
and my husband's like making a bridge out of sand. And like, that's, you know, he loves that stuff. So that's fine. That's He's got his thing. Got mine.
Your husband, you were dating him forever. Mm-hmm. All the Pretty Little Liars that I knew. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to say it like that.
I know you're like when you were 12.
Yeah. No, no. Definitely not. We were family friends.
Got it.
So we've known each other forever.
Got it. Got
which
it, got
is
it,
really
it.
Cool. So a little like, I don't have any siblings. He's got 8.
Oh,
he's one of 9 kids. And okay. so I have known his family for so long that I've seen all of his siblings grow up and they feel like my siblings because we just were hung out all the time. His dad was in like set making and special effects and stuff. So he was also around the industry in a different way. Mm-hmm. He got behind the scenes. He was in production and was like on Wipeout and Funny or Die and did all of those fun things.
Nice.
Yeah. So just different, which was perfect.
Yeah.
He wasn't an actor.
Yeah.
He understands the industry that was like taken care of and loves film, like loves writing. And he's got all of his own stuff, but he wasn't an actor. That was good.
There's only one star in this family.
I will never date an actor.
No,
not Hudson.
Hudson.
Yeah. Hudson. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no. Hudson Hendricks. I get them mixed up all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Taking it back to Pretty Little Liars for a second, because you were a lot younger than the girls, did you ever not feel part of the pack? And I know that you came in and out and you were obviously your character was deceased. So you weren't in a lot of flashbacks. Yeah. But did it feel like you were taken in and be honest with open arms, or was it just maybe a time and a place where we're all just trying to figure it out? We're in our 20s, you were in your teens,
almost.
So there is like such a big gap. I mean, there's probably 12 years at least between maybe
between
10 years.
Us, I think Lucy was almost 19 21. When she shot the pilot.
No? Okay. Oh, damn.
Yeah, because she turned 21, I think, after the first season.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Wow. I think.
Oh.
Fact check me.
Damn, everybody.
I think she was about 21 in the
beginning.
Everyone
was over 18, but I one of them was 18 or 19.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
one
probably
of them.
Lucy.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it was Lucy, because I think Lucy's the youngest, because Lucy and Ashley are pretty close.
The same.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So answer your question, a little bit of both. And I think that in the beginning, like I was coming on for flashback. So it was, I think contractually I was 13 out of 24.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hopping in and out. And I think I was very much welcomed, but it was like a little sister sort of a thing. And I don't mean that negatively. It was just like, aw.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right. And was your mom was on? Was your mom on set?
My mom was always on set. Yeah. My mom is so not a stage mom. Yeah. She used to sit by Jeff Sound and like they were like such cute friends. My mom would be sewing and he would give her ears and like, you know, she'd watch from the monitor from the sound side. And like she was never someone that interfered. She kind of just let me do my thing, which was really great. Unless obviously something was necessary, but on our set there wasn't. But yeah, I feel like there was definitely a shift when I was alive. Then I was there more frequently. I also graduated at 13. So then I was I was able to work longer hours. So then I was on set longer. Mm-hmm. And that changed changed things. I think it was like, it's one of those things where I can't really fault anybody for it. Mm-hmm. I did have such an age gap. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel like there was much of a gap. But naturally, I think just optically, on the other side of it, you see me as younger, which is, I understand. I was 17, 18, I think, was more, I was more included into everything. And that was just, it was just a transition. It was different. Now I was in the show more. It kind of like went along with the show, ironically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, it's like, there's a lot of estrogen on our set. It was all females, right?
Yeah.
All syncing up at the same time, mm-hmm. doing all those fun things that women do.
And everyone thinks that everyone got on. I didn't have any disagreements with anyone, really. But behind the scenes, not everyone got on.
Look, especially at that time where we were doing 24 episodes, 22 to 24 episodes, which just doesn't happen anymore, mm-hmm. right? So it's like a lot of women for 9 straight months, essentially, spending more time with each other than they do with their friends and their families. Mm-hmm. Growing up, because we were mm-hmm. in our 20s. We were mm-hmm. in our young teens and 20s, right? Trying to figure out what the fuck we were doing with our lives. Mm-hmm. With a lot of pressure and a lot of
opportunity.
A lot of opportunity. It's not all bad.
Overlapping,
like a lot of
opportunity.
Right. There's a lot happening there. And the fact that nothing like catastrophic happened was actually really impressive.
Right.
Exactly.
And I feel like for a show like ours, you look at other shows that are as iconic or even just like Charmed or, you know, One Tree Hill, or you take shows that were like cult followed by so many and like so important to so many fans, and you tear back those layers and see all the shit that happened on those sets too. Like it's not uncommon. And I think that we did a fairly good job considering all of the elements that we had going on.
Mm. Yeah.
Nothing's perfect.
Yeah. That was incredibly well said.
Exactly. I mean, it's just a lot of personalities and it's Hollywood. It's like, it's cool now. Like we've got like a group chat and it's like, you know, we're all having kids and like people are married and you, it's like reminiscing back to like high school.
Yeah.
You know,
Lindsay, are you part of the group chat? What it feels like.
No,
it's not. That's not like it, I'm not saying it's like we text every weekend. Well, it's like milestones.
We're in a group chat.
You and I are in a group chat.
Well, Sasha and
please do. Yeah. Please do.
Do you have the infamous?
I do.
Oh,
yeah, I do.
What's the infamous?
I love it.
Oh, you do
the infamous
yeah.
hat.
Yeah.
I just remember one time I like, I don't know, I was talking to Shay about like the scene she had to do last night. They were there for the whole night. It was a scene with you in an interrogation room with them. And I just remember Shay's face. She's like, damn, she can act. Like she was so impressed
with me.
Like you had like carried a scene in there. And I was like, oh, damn. Because I hadn't gotten a chance to like work with you or see you do anything. And I would never forget her reaction. And I was like, oh, she is impressed because, you know, Shay was like very much a... It took a little bit to impress her, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, okay.
You're like, I want to impress you.
Yeah.
I think Troyn and I always had a lot of fun with our scenes. It's hard to say, like, closeness, too. Like, I feel like I had something with everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, obviously Shay and I were always making out.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. That's right.
Well, so maybe it was after one of those scenes. Never mind.
Yeah, exactly. She can really act.
So what was that like? Mm. Did you have your first kiss on the show on screen?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
It was such an important storyline. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that I got to do it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we did it in general. There was a lot of things that I'm happy about as far as the way that they tackled that. Even just the fact that like, you know, Emily's mom, like Pam, wasn't thrilled about it. It wasn't like, here's this, you know, it's all happy, you know, everyone's accepting. It's like, no, there's a lot of friction that happens in these situations. And so I'm happy that we gave light to certain things. Mm. And there was definitely a couple of mistakes made. However, as far as like the way that Shay and I interacted with it, it was very like, not awkward at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like
it's easier to kiss a girl than a guy.
It's so much easier to kiss a girl. Yeah, it really is.
I feel like they understand. They're not, I mean, I'm not saying that men are leechy, but it's just, you don't, there's like a different sensibility to it, and
right, it's
softness,
like,
and sweetness.
Softness is a good way of explaining it, where it's like, there's nothing, you're not really worried about anything. Like, the mm-hmm. things that you're worried about mm-hmm. are like the scene mm-hmm. or like, did that look right? Maybe, yeah. but not,
there's
not
no
at all.
Other sex, opposite sex intimidation, yes. or yeah. any of those dynamics yeah. coming into play.
So it felt very, very, felt very comfortable.
Yeah.
I was very aware of like the Allison side of it mm-hmm. because it's a tricky one for as a character to make it seem very genuine, just because it's a little shit.
Yeah.
yeah.
Allison was just,
I mean, continuing like, to find redemptive arcs
exactly,
or ways to.
Right. right. Like the softness in it. Like I haven't, we were talking about like watching the episodes, right? Like if you watched all the episodes earlier, and it's one of those things to me where there was a point where I didn't watch all the episodes, mm-hmm. but there's one where I proposed to Emily mm. and I fucking hate the way that scene turned out.
Mm, why?
No one else would know because it's the only way that they know that scene. But it's a personal thing. I hate the way that like we went about how she was acting in that scene. Like the I wish it should have been sweeter. It should have been like better mm-hmm. prepared. I think like Allison should have done something different in mm-hmm. that scene. And that mm-hmm. really, that's bugged me because mm-hmm. it's such an important part yeah. of their storyline. Like mm-hmm. it bugged me the way that their engagement happened. But that's like a personal thing.
Yeah.
No one else, I haven't seen anyone feel upset about that scene, but it's, I know what it could have been. Mm-hmm. So it's like the nuances of Allison that I think, and then with the spinoff, she got divorced. Like
third, I know. I thought about
like
the
third scene or the third episode. They were like signing yeah. divorce papers. I was like.
Do you feel that when you did the spinoff, obviously you had such high hopes for it. And did you know from the get-go that it wasn't going to be as big a deal as Pretty Little Liars, or did you feel like it could have the same legs?
I think it's one of those things where I was very hesitant to do it in the beginning, just in general, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, spinoffs, they're never as successful. Most of the time anyway, they're never as successful. I thought in the beginning, I thought that there was going to be a lot of things that could be super beneficial, and it unfortunately didn't turn out that way. Mm-hmm. I think that there were lots of mistakes made via storyline that would have made a huge difference. Like I think taking away Emerson so fast was mm-hmm. like a massive mistake, both on what the fans deserved and on a business side.
Right.
It was a very
right.
stupid decision.
Right.
And I think that there was a lot of false confidence in it that like, oh, well, Pretty Liars, well, right. this will do well.
Right.
Right.
Which is never the case. You always have to put effort into it.
Right.
And so I think there was a lot of like, oh, we'll just do what we always do, just not as hands-on. And
do you feel like they honored your characters going forward, or did they kind of dilute as it went?
I think it was diluted. It felt very like old tricks,
mm-hmm.
Just not executed as well.
Right.
Did they pay you a ton to do it?
Oh, I got, oh, how many enemies do we want to make on one episode?
Tell me how much. Because it's a big deal to go from like, you're the lead, this is your show now, mm-hmm. right? And you've already proved that you're so great on another show that's a hit. So did they come with a lot of money, or was it?
I got a really fun note back that was like, it was supposed to make me feel good. It was, congratulations, you are now the highest paid actress on Freeform. Oh, great. I'm earning the same as what I earned on Pretty Little Liars.
Yeah.
And now that the show, now that Pretty Little Liars is over, I'm the top earner on the network, but it's the female. So I was like, okay, hold on. So what's
the male?
Wait, did male?
I'm the top female. I'm not the top like actor
earner
on the network. I was the top female.
What?
So I was like,
did the men
what does
the
that
liars
mean?
Make more than the women?
That's an unfair thing. It's unfair and not unfair. I don't think that they made more in a total, but per episode.
I don't think fans really understand, because they think that people become so rich off shows like Pretty Little Liars, that even the girls, I remember they said that I can't remember the fourth season or fifth season, they all went in together mm-hmm. to go and get a pay rise, because once you've been paid, you pay your manager,
course,
your agent, your lawyer, your
26%.
Then you pay $5,000 for your publicist, you're getting, and then tax, you're getting like 30% of what you make, which mm-hmm. again is better than minimum wage,
right,
but it's not a lot of money.
Right.
Well, yeah. On top of that, it's one of those things where it's hard. you look at a show like Pretty Little Liars and how successful it was worldwide, and then you compare it to shows where you know they are getting more money for what they're doing, either the same success or less success, and you're like, they're earning, I'm not even kidding,
10 times.
20 times, 20 sometimes times. More than what we were earning. And we're doing more episodes, so we're spending more time on set, not able to do other things. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of like, yeah. And then, you know, not getting syndication and not all the things.
Do you get residuals? Do you guys get residuals?
I do.
I get residuals now from HBO Max.
You didn't get them before?
Oh, when it went to Netflix, we didn't.
I got residuals.
I did too. That's not the only Netflix. Reason I was.
You wind
I
used it from to get Freeform.
Like a, I used to get like random, from, like a $10,000 check
before Netflix.
Always since I started.
Well, I got residuals before when they were rerunning them on Freeform.
Gotcha.
But there was a 3-year period
where it was
when the
Netflix.
Show was ending. Yeah, that they sold it to Netflix, and then those 3 years we didn't get anything because there were no streaming laws to cover us for that.
I feel like I've that was steadily gotten a paycheck same. From, but not right. not 10 like
I'm
nothing,
glad,
but no, like but steadily
not a lot.
Is there like a recurring? Is it a different contract
so we, now? We weren't series regulars,
right?
Oh,
I was asked to be a series regular and I turned it down.
That might have been the difference. I wonder how
the
that
different.
Works.
I know Nickelodeon is totally different, but like as main characters on Nickelodeon, we don't get paid residuals, but all of the supporting characters still do.
Mm.
That was a clause I thought was specific to Nickelodeon. But that's so
yeah.
That's
so anything
so interesting.
That's rerun on like Freeform or whatever, wow. we'll get residuals yeah. from that.
Yeah,
but yeah, that Netflix period.
Yeah. I always used to think because I thought, well, if the girls didn't get paid that much on the show, they're probably getting a butt ton. Because I thought, well, if I'm getting checks, then they're getting. I was in 57 episodes; they're in 150, right?
Mm-hmm.
So no, yes, 57. So they're getting three times, and then probably more money because their deal's probably better. I thought everyone's getting all these crazy checks coming in.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you get a fatty residual check before that, but then that 3-year span, if you broke it down, including those 3 years, I bet right. it's like similar.
So now with like the strike being over, it's not from Pretty Little Liars, it's just from other things I've done on Netflix. Now that I'm getting residuals from Netflix, I'm like, holy shit, I'm doing the same math where I'm like, if we were getting residuals from Netflix at the peak mm-hmm. at that time, oh. mm. if these checks are this size, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what mm-hmm. the checks would have been.
Yep.
For Pretty Little Liars.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You talk about PCOS mm-hmm. and how are you now with that?
Yeah. So it's been quite the journey.
Mm.
Polycystic ovary syndrome, for people that don't know, it's a hormone imbalance, hormone disease. And it's hard because it looks different on everybody. So many women have it that don't know. So many women that have had ovarian cancer or have had like fibromyalgia or a lot of weird things are connected to PCOS. They had it before or it's a side effect of. It's really complicated to deal with because everybody responds differently.
Mm-hmm.
Mine, you saw it in weight gain. You saw it in, that was the most visual side that you could see it for me. Internally, it was like not regular periods, fatigue, like just in general rejection of things that were good for my body.
Mm.
Like I would physically throw up after eating like a salad,
mm.
which made no sense, right? Seems like it's been a long journey. I went to 17 gynecologists. They all thought that I was crazy. Like I got asked questions like, well, you must be lying because like, how many times do you go to a fast food restaurant? Like tell me. Ugh. Like it was like it was like I was making it all up in my head, mm. essentially.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
I went to one endocrinologist and I told her what I was, you know, dealing with. And she was like, I think you've got PCOS. And I was like, what the fuck is that? I've right. never heard about that. Like, what is that? And excuse me. And she was the one that pinpointed it. And it was just testing my hormone levels. How much testosterone do you have? Usually women have a higher level of testosterone. Mm-hmm. Vitamin D deficient, like simple things. I tried a couple medications, like I'm on metformin still. That really helps me. And essentially that just, for my case, helps keep my ovulation regular, mm-hmm. which helps my period regulate. But it was not fully successfully balanced until after Hendrix. Hendrix, like through pregnancy, which is a very, very, very small percentage of women that this happens to, it actually regulates your hormones.
Oh. Did for me.
It did?
What?
I had no anxiety.
Like it's amazing.
I have anxiety based on my hormones being all over the place.
Yeah.
I was the calmest. I felt great.
Yeah. So I... that has been life-changing. So the first time I'd ever had a regular period in my life was 5 months after having him.
Oh.
Yeah.
The weight gain, though, when it showed up in the show, did you... And no one really knew what was going on.
I didn't know what was going on.
Did you feel... And it's 14 years ago where, like, weight was just... Diet culture was just so in our faces. And the things were... Hannah was saying in, like, the episode, like, one of the episodes, is my face looked fatter on one side than the other. And then Mona was like...
And why are you giving me, like, this muffin... Like, my boyfriend just dumped me for somebody who weighs 11 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just constantly pushing out faces.
What was that experience like?
The hard part was that I didn't know what was happening. Because if I knew, okay, well, this is happening because of PCOS, I'm gaining weight, I'm fluctuating. I gained 75 pounds in 1 year, and I had no idea why.
And you're on a TV show.
And I'm on a TV show, right? And I'm playing the it girl character. Oh, God. And so it's like, if I knew what it was, I could have been outspoken about it. I could have been like, guys, this is happening. You know, go to your doctors, get this checked. This is how I'm dealing with it. It would have been, I wouldn't say easier, but in ways it would have, because I would have had an explanation for myself and also something to give other people. Because of course it was, is she pregnant? That was the first one, because that's the easiest thing that people go to. And then, you know, I got everything under the sun, and that's where social media comes into it, which is just really unfortunate. I'd say that for the most part, people were fine on set. Like, I didn't get any crazy, like, nobody came to me and was like, you need to lose weight. But I felt it in other ways. I felt it in the writing.
What would they say?
Not like the writers coming to me. I just mean like I could feel a transition of like what they were doing in the show.
Oh, with your character.
With my character, yeah. Right? And then of course, the way that I was dressed. I looked like a politician for like 3 years.
You did. I looked back at someone, I was like, what are you
wearing?
What the
fuck am I wearing?
Always a blazer.
I love our wardrobe team, but like I hated what happened. And essentially it was like covering it up, right? It was like the sweaters or the blazers or the, you know, like whatever they thought that was like, it did the opposite.
Right.
Did they say anything to you?
Nobody questioned me on it. I think they were I think they were fairly respectful about it considering, I don't want to put blame on anybody on that side. But as far as like the pressure to be a certain size or a certain way of looking, when I was, you know, oh my God, 13 and had like a nice, great 13-year-old metabolism. Sure, I was a smaller size in my jeans. And there was a gene comparison size where somebody said to me, oh my gosh, well, you know that, you know, that this actress is a certain size, like you're smaller than her in your gene sizes. And it was like something I should be proud of. And that always stuck with me because I was like, now that I'm not, now that I am like, you know, five sizes bigger in jeans than this other actress, like now what? And what are you saying about me to that person or to the, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's like it was like an unintentional or maybe intentional comparison game. And I never feel that way about women. I never have. I think that's just so ridiculous and unfair to like, we've got so many other things that we put on ourselves. We really need that one.
that stuff I think is just so toxic, like and unnecessary. So it's, I think it ruined a lot of career opportunities, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I think that there's a lot of things that I didn't do, certain things that I just couldn't get. Everyone was just confused and was kind of like, okay, well, there's that. I got a little bit of a handle on it right before The Perfectionists. Mm-hmm. And then I had an imbalance again. And it just like, so you could see it even in the spinoff, mm-hmm. you can see the change in weight. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult because then I'm doing press and I like, you know, I don't look, and I really truly do not look like myself. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's such a stark comparison. And that's the thing with the internet, like that will always be there. You know, when people reference it, that's what, well, there'll be an article that will come up, someone doing an article on me, and like, they'll use a photo that like doesn't look anything like me anymore. Right. And people are confused. And I totally understand that. I think that there is, I think people are better about, because we've been so, I have talked about it anyway so much, that it should not, it shouldn't, our value should not be placed on what we look like, at what weight we are, at what, you know, like that's not where our value should come in society. Mm. And I'm all about your health level. Like, health looks different on everybody. Mm-hmm. There, I have so many friends who are just naturally lean and like, it's great. Like, they are healthy at that level. Mm-hmm. Any other level for them would be unhealthy. There are women that are healthy in a different size, and that's great. Like, everybody's aim should be defined their healthy level, mm-hmm. not a gene size, mm-hmm. not, you know, like, you know, whatever fits in today, what's cool today, you know, thicker, thinner, like mm-hmm. whatever adjective you want to use. It's like, what is your healthy size? Right. What makes you feel good aside from like what people say about you on the internet?
Mm. Holy crap. What a strong woman. I saw you on Dancing with the Stars, but like you weren't hiding. You weren't, like you were, you know what I mean? Like
that experience, I had just found out that I had PCOS. Mm. So that was an interesting one too, because it was like, oh, I finally have this diagnosis. Now what do I do with it? So that was an interesting learning.
Right. But like you weren't, like you were right there.
I had a
you
lot
were still
of people,
in the ring, you know?
I mean, yeah. I had a lot of people come up to me after Dancing with the Stars and say that they got diagnosed because of it.
Oh.
It was like, oh, those symptoms happened to me. Like, wow. That's weird. Okay, well, maybe I should, you know, see if that is my issue. And it was. And I had so many, actually, female friends who have PCOS say, oh my God, I have PCOS. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be like, why aren't we talking about it? Right. I've known you for years.
It's not even studied.
Wow.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's crazy to me, you know, like, it's just something that just simply needs to be talked about. Like, hey, I feel like this when this happens. Yeah. And that just in itself can, like, change your life, how you feel.
I mean, Lucy was talking about, she mentioned in an interview that like she was drinking and not eating. And I look back at the first couple of episodes and we all look so thin. Don't you think I looked so thin, and funnily enough, I actually eat the same, but I think I was just younger. But yeah. We all looked like, I looked at Melissa and her arms were like twigs. Tori.
Yeah.
I mean, you're tiny. You were tiny, right? When you came on the show, you're like, that was not.
I don't know if we're looking at thinking about the same person. That didn't happen until my drug use started on the show. But
right. Did you know Lindsay was taking drugs?
Ever? I did not know that you were.
Yeah. No, we didn't have.
We hardly had scenes together. Yeah. Unless I was just very mean to you in a scene for like two seconds.
2 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of like.
Shay was really more in on that journey with.
I think I was kind to you.
Yeah. Oh my God. You were so kind.
Very kind.
So kind. I remember Cindy, the makeup lady, looking at me too, like, I remember when she clocked that I had a problem for the first time, and I was just like, oh God, you know?
I mean, everyone had something. My whole thing was just don't have a panic attack. I used to carry a Xanax in my bra for the entire 7 seasons because I was so afraid to panic.
Yeah.
I think Ashley, one of them had a panic attack on set, and then the fire department or something came. I think one of them, because it was anxiety inducing. The whole thing is like the pressure of, I mean, you will get it. When the show becomes successful, I think the pressure is just almost like this weight to like, don't fuck it up, because then it costs people millions of dollars.
But also remember, you guys, like this was at the out, like not the outset, but like social media was just coming online. Mm. Like Pretty Little Liars put social media on the map, man. Like,
oh my God, Twitter.
I mean, most tweeted about Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter and Pretty Little Liars were babies. Like it was just such an explosion. Yep. It was just so lucky, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So do you feel like now you've made it? Like, where do you, I mean, you're still so young. There's still much more life you have in you, acting life. You know, things change as we get older. I remember being told when I had a baby, I was no longer an ingenue by my reps. You know,
that's cute.
There are less roles, even though I know that we say that it's changing, and it is. There's less roles for women who are getting older, or we're like, they play the mom, or, you know, they're not as meaty as they were when at least I was younger. Do you feel like you've made it? And then do you feel like, what do you want for your future? And if you don't get that, will you feel like you've ever failed?
Mm. Great question. Great question.
She's like, oh,
I think I look at it like I've had such a cool career. Like I've loved what I've done, aside from a couple things. I've loved, for the most part, what I've done. I feel very grateful and lucky. I've had some really just like unique experiences, gotten to do a lot of really cool things with characters and like a lot of cool actors that I've worked with. Like I feel very lucky and grateful to have had the experiences that I've had. Do I feel like I'm done? Absolutely not. Do I feel like I've made it? No. Mm-hmm. I feel very lucky and grateful to have been a part of like Pretty Little Liars, which was just so iconic and something that will like always be looked back on, right? And remembered for, you know, lots of different things. I would never, ever, ever take that for granted. But I feel like because everything is so fast, it's not enough. And that's okay because I wouldn't want it to be enough. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I've made it. I feel like I've got so much to give. I feel like I've made it in a sense of like, you will know, oh, Sasha from, oh, Pretty Little Liars. Oh, right. Her, right. Mm, it's like right. That type of made it.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's like an explanation involved. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I don't consider that a failure by any means. If I just never got a project again, I wouldn't think that it was a failure. I think it would be more of a bummer because I love it so much. And I think it would be hard because I would be looking back at all of the missed opportunities or maybe the things that could have been, which just inevitably we do, no matter how hard we say that we won't or that we shouldn't. It's human nature. But I want to direct, I want to produce, I want to do more, you know, not just acting. Like I love the industry. It would be a real shame. However, I have so many other interests that like, if I was barred from it, it would be okay.
Mm.
I've seen you cooking with your bra on.
I'm interested in that. I am. I certainly am. Like, it's so cool aesthetically. It's just.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's really a beautiful, like, her whole style. Like, I love it.
I wouldn't have expected that from you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, that's something that I would never...
because you're such a lady in the streets, yo.
I'm super sexy. I'm super freaky in the sheets. And proud of it.
Hey, large Scorpio.
I'm an Aquarius, but I birthed a Scorpio.
Weird.
Yeah,
are you a Scorpio?
No.
Oh, good. But, thank God.
Scorpios she gave me a Scorpio energy for a minute.
I'm scared.
Allie was
my
a Scorpio.
Dad's a Scorpio.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Flavor.
Yeah.
I've another business that I never thought that I would be going into. I would love to see my reaction as like a, maybe like a 13, 14 year old telling myself that I would be getting involved in a THC beverage. So right. that, yeah. So I, yeah,
do you
I'm just
take weed?
Casually,
do you smoke weed?
What THC
don't
beverage
smoke weed.
Do you have?
Do you drink weed?
I drink weed because I'm making a drink.
Yeah.
So four of us, myself, my husband, and two of our really good friends have created a company called Hippie Water. Let me explain this right, because I am the CEO, which is really fun. That's been a huge, interesting journey. But my badass friend, Taylor, she's drop dead gorgeous. She's also a food scientist. Mm-hmm. She is such a force. She's fed you and you just haven't, you know, if you've ever gone to Taco Bell in the middle of the night after, yeah, you have. She's been coined the beverage queen.
Wow.
That's what she specializes in, and she's excellent at it. She's worked with international and domestic companies, small companies, huge companies. But this is the first time that she's making something for herself. And I'm super proud as a friend who's known her for over 10 years to see her do this. But it's a selfish product. That's how it kind of started, because I love alcohol. I've had my fun, but it just doesn't fit in my lifestyle anymore. You know, I wish in ways,
we're all
but
sober.
I also,
great.
Yeah, like it's California sober on my side.
Right.
It's one of those things where we wanted to create something that didn't have like a compromise, where you can still go and hang out with your girlfriends and, you know, have a drink, but then wake up great the next day and get up at 6 a.m. with your kid and not have a hangover, or go work out, or, you know, go to work, or whatever it is, whatever your lifestyle is. We wanted to make sure that like you didn't have to compromise on that. And so many millennials and Gen Z are not drinking anymore. It's just not, it's not as cool. Mm-hmm. It's not like the benefits aren't, you know, what we thought that they would be as you get older. It's just not the same.
Yeah.
And so we really believe in clean ingredients as well. Like, you can read our label. There's nothing that we're hiding. We're all, no sugar added. It comes from fruit juice and sparkling water and cannabis. So it's hemp derived. Wow. So we can ship to you, to your door. It's great.
Wow.
When I had weed, I told my mom that I was stuck between life and death. And I didn't know how to get out of
Hey, so hold on.
When you're not stoned, that's what's up.
So we're low dose. We're five milligrams.
Oh, that's good. That's probably better than the whole thing.
Yeah. And so actually the science behind it is really, really fascinating. So now I know all of this science, which is really fun. But it's a nano-emulsion. So unlike an edible, where you take an edible and it's like, an hour, 2 hours, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, fuck, I'm sticking into my couch, and like, when is this going to end?
Awful,
like terrible experiences. Yeah, this is not what you're going to have with this.
Great.
So it's kind of like drinking a glass of wine or a beer, where you're also, you know, self-dosing. So essentially, you're not getting 5 milligrams on your first sip. It's throughout the drink. And it's meant for like an energetic, calming situation versus like a sink into your couch, fall asleep.
Well, I'm sold. You can send it to my house in Nashville.
Yeah, I'll take some too.
I can. Yeah.
Hippie Water. That's incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Like, wow.
Congratulations of just keeping your shit together.
I know.
Oh, doing my best. I don't know. Depends.
Right?
Depends
and inspiration in life, man. I love meeting women that I'm like, I'm going to model myself after this classy lady.
And they're like, it's too hard.
This is me.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. So much for being here, sharing your energy, your story, Hippie Water. Check it out.
Yes.
Thank you.
And we now are going to go to the true crime element of this podcast.
Please, I'm so excited for this.
Talk about the show yet.
Joseph Scott Morgan.
Hi.
Hi.
Welcome, Joseph Scott Morgan, Joe Scott, who is now the friend of the podcast, who talks to us at the end of each episode, breaking down the episode we've spoken about, and really sort of investigating what it would be like if Pretty Little Liars was a real crime happening today. He is a
forensic scientist. He's an author. He has a podcast on iHeartRadio with over 200 episodes.
Yes.
So, like, he's got a little bit to share with us.
Yeah, and Nancy Grace is like
his BFF. They're on speed dial.
They're like real, real tight. Mm-hmm. So, without further ado.
Well, we have been. It all depends on which way the wind is blowing. Down. You never know with Nancy.
Is she nice in real life?
She teases me a lot. I always tell people, you know, she doesn't bite. hard. So there you go.
That's what I say to my husband. I'm like, will you marry me? I don't bite hard. He's like, I'll get what I can get. Well, thank you for coming back on the show.
If I'm with her in her presence, I always have to check and see how much room I have in my pants afterwards to see if she's taking a bite out of my rear end. But other than that,
I thought you were going to go somewhere else.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I'm really glad we went PC on this. We went to your butt.
She's truly an angel and truly cares about victims. And that's what I love about her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's always, always fighting for victims all the time. And that's the cool thing about it. Yeah. So there you go.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we're going to break down episode 2.
Cool.
You remember episode 2?
We
delved in deep. And I think our first question was, who knew the gazebo was under construction? Because that's where we're getting a little bit more sort of, we're trying to figure out who could possibly be who could possibly have hidden her body under the gazebo.
Okay. I think for me, when you're talking about, and just kind of go with me here, because I've worked cases involving new construction.
Mm.
And this gets a little bit dark because many times if you have individuals that have access to a construction site, and I've worked cases like this, bodies sometimes can be taken and buried in the footers of buildings. I've had people that have been placed into holes, and you see this played out in fictionalized versions, but it really does happen where you'll have a mixer of concrete where this is dumped entirely onto bodies. But it has to be a perfect storm because the individual, the perpetrator that's doing this, has to have knowledge, first off, that there's even construction going on and it wouldn't be noticed. And secondly, they have to have access to a particular area where they're not going to draw attention. And are they skilled enough to do it when no one else is around? Say perhaps in the dark, do they have the right tools in order to facilitate this? And so when you think about, in this case, when you think about the gazebo construction, we look at a crime scene from the perspective, if we're talking about construction going on around a body, are we able to read the terrain and the earth itself to try to determine if the gazebo was being built approximating the same time as when the body was buried? What changes in the soil? And that's something that we refer to in forensic anthropology as taphonomy. And taphonomy is this, and it's got elements of geology in it as well, but in the recent past, not the distant past. So any changes in the soil, the makeup of the soil, have things been added to that environment? Has water been introduced? Because even the flow of water over a buried body can change, first off, how the body is settling, what's brought or introduced into the area around the body by the water, because you can have chemical runoff. You can also have animal life that comes into an environment where a body is. So all of this is going to affect it. And then how much is the soil being disrupted by the construction going on around it? That's kind of fascinating. Mm. So if you time it just right, if you can bury the body after, say, the framework has been done, but before the flooring goes in, and you bury the body just prior to the flooring going in, no one will ever know the difference, perhaps. And that's the key. And did you get it deep enough? Did you get the hole deep enough so that, and forgive me for saying this, but so that it's not going to be giving off any foul odors, if you know what I mean? Because decomposition is always going on. And the one thing about it is this, is that with decomposition, you're always going to attract animals. And it can be anything from possums to raccoons to even family dogs that'll come and try to get into that area, to explore that area, because the smell is just driving them nuts. Animals are really fascinating in that sense because, and you think about dogs, we have a visual spectrum that we work on, that we see things, okay? If you can imagine the way like a canine has the sense, the olfactory sense, where they smell things, their spectrum is so big, we cannot even begin to fathom how broad it is. They can smell the smallest little nuance. So that's a real trick here. If you're trying to get rid of a body, are you going to be able to do it without attracting not only humans, but are you going to be able to avoid dogs? And you're talking about in a neighborhood. So there's always neighborhood animals running about. So that's a big hurdle you have to overcome.
Whoa. Quick question. This might be super stupid. Does the concrete preserve them at all, or do they still decompose?
No, they will break down. And here's kind of a cool thing about concrete. And when you do an encasing of a body like this, whatever was with that body or surrounding that area, because you're creating, if you think about an entombment with concrete, you're still going to have like an air pocket in there. And for a period of time, you can have at, say, like a microbial level, you'll still have these little nasties that are still working in this environment. It does shield the body to a great degree. So you can still pick up on trauma, particularly if you're talking about like bone fractures. Sometimes they'll still, depending upon how soon you get to the body, you can still have soft tissue. And I think a lot of people labor under this idea that as soon as you put a body in the ground, that somehow the body automatically skeletonizes and all the evidence is gone. That doesn't happen. It's a process that takes a period of time for that to happen. So it all depends on how soon the investigators can get access. And of course, the sooner the better, because you're going to be able to appreciate, you know, the trauma that was there. And it's not necessarily going to be as disrupted by decomposition. You can't freeze decomposition. You know, here's kind of a shocker for people. Even bodies that are embalmed, bodies that go into a casket, for instance, there's still a level of decomposition that goes on. They're not going to stay that way forever and ever. Amen. It just takes longer, but you can never cease. You can never make nature stop. It's this force that just goes on and on and on, even with embalmed bodies that have been properly prepared. How much more so with a body that has not been embalmed and it's encased, it's still going to continue to break down.
This might be a really intense question, but is there a smell that you can give an example of? Like, does a dead body smell different than anything else you've ever smelled?
Yeah, I've had people ask me this question before, and here's kind of, and I can give you kind of an interesting aside about this. There was a lot made. I don't know how many of our fans here remember the Casey Anthony case, but with the little girl, Kaylee, they brought in a guy that claimed that he could detect human decomposition. And of course her car came into play there in the trunk of the car. You know, there is, and he states that he could take air samples and tell the difference between human decomposition and any other kind of animal. And that still is not proven science, even, you know, and that was several years ago. He claimed that that could happen, and it's not. There's not empirical evidence. People will say, and you'll hear them say this, I've smelled a decomposing body, and it smells unlike anything else in the world. Now, that's inaccurate, because I've been around a lot of decomposing bodies. As a matter of fact, where I started my career in South Louisiana, it's a very harsh environment around New Orleans, that area. Very harsh environment, and bodies go really quickly. But I've had bodies that were adjacent to deer carcasses. I actually had a body that was in a canal that was adjacent to a dead alligator, and I couldn't pick up on a difference between the smell. So I think a lot of people kind of, it's not that they romanticize it. It's just that they think that we're different, you know, as a creature from other animals. But it's really hard to tell the difference, I think, particularly in the natural world. When you're out there and you're walking along and you smell something that smells foul, you can't just say with your nose, that's definitely a decomposing human remain. It could be a deer, it could be a cow, it could be a dog, it could be anything. You have to prove it. You have to prove it by visually inspecting the remain and verifying it, that it is either is human or it is not. And it's not always clear, because sometimes bodies, both animals and humans, are greatly, greatly disrupted. And so sometimes it takes a bit more of an examination to determine what you're dealing with, because, you know, we can have just large pieces of tissue that are out there, and you can't just eyeball a piece of tissue and say, yeah, that's definitely human. You have to verify it. And so there's multiple ways that we do that, but that's, it's an excellent question. I think a lot of people want to have an answer to that, but just because you smell something foul doesn't necessarily mean that it's a decaying human. It can be your something breath. Else entirely.
So your breath.
Cover all of your bases.
Oh my God. If your breath smells like a dead body, we got to do something about that.
Well, you're going to be the one to tell me.
You know what? I ain't saying, I'm just going to just be like, halitosis. I'm just going to be halitosis. Asphyxiation. I think in episode two, they determined that her death was by strangling. So how do they come to that realization? What's on her body other than just bruising? Is it just that simple that there's bruising around her neck? How do you know that a body has died from asphyxiation?
Right. Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because strangulation can occur in any number of ways. And when we say asphyxial deaths, that's a real broad category. That can mean everything from someone with a plastic bag over their head to a pillow that's used for suffocation, to deprivation of oxygen. Say, for instance, if somebody's in a closed-in space, perhaps, and this is horrific to think of, I'm claustrophobic personally, and you shut them into that area, you're going to run out of oxygen. Well, that's oxygen deprivation, but that's an asphyxial death. Mm. When you're talking about strangulation, there's a couple of categories, people have seen like movies and whatnot where you'll see a perpetrator with their hands like this, and they reach forward and they grasp somebody's neck. That's called throttling. Mm-hmm. It's like this. Then you have what's referred to as a C-clamp, which is like this, where the organs in the neck are squeezed, and most of the time the trachea is fractured sometimes. And then you can have a ligature strangulation, which means a cord or a rope of some kind has been wrapped around the neck. And those things are going to vary greatly when you take a look at them. If you're thinking about, say, for instance, a cord, the surface area is very, very narrow. So if you're strangling or choking somebody with a cord, it'll have a real deep furrow, but it's not going to be real wide. Whereas if a belt was used, it's going to be a bit more superficial, but the area, the mark left on the neck will be wider. Mm-hmm. With the hands, I've actually worked cases where I've had victims that have been throttled so hard that you can find hemorrhage on either side externally on the neck where it actually marries up with the shape of hands.
Oh, wow.
That's how much force was used. And you can see kind of the outline of fingers on a neck. And those are, you know, really over the top cases, but they do exist. So when we do an autopsy, we're very, very careful about that. We do a real thorough external examination. And then finally, when the body is open, you know, we can see all of the hemorrhage and the damage that's taken place. And so there's kind of a checklist that we go down to eliminate certain things. And before we even get to the neck, one of the things we're going to look for if we suspect asphyxia is we'll look in the eyes. And people have heard about this before. And you look for the little pinprick hemorrhages, which are called petechial hemorrhages. And the little vessels burst, and it's because of so much pressure, behind the eye, building up in the head. And so the little vessels are burst in these little soft tissues around the eyes. And if you see that, then you get an indication that you might very well be dealing with an asphyxial death. Now, there's other ways that people can rupture their vessels in the eyes. Believe it or not, women will do this in childbirth. You'll see petechial hemorrhages
because
the pressure is so tremendous.
I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, this is some... No. Oh, sorry. Go on. Yeah. That was scary.
You're like,
no,
never no. am I doing
here's,
that.
Here's another little aside too. People don't realize and this is kind of gross, but people that have really bad constipation
actually
have petechial hemorrhages as well. So you have to
when
be
you're
very
pregnant
careful.
Too, you're you know, like constipated.
When you're examining the eyes, you can't just automatically assume that
they just might have had a bad case of
an asphyxial death.
Yeah, they might just have had a bad constipation and then died.
It's tremendous force that's being exerted, and those are the two big examples. You know that you'll see other than just that pressure, because what you're doing is you're literally in very basic, this is not rocket science. What you're doing is you're squeezing the neck so hard that the blood, you can't get return flow on the blood yeah. coming back from the brain. And these vessels, the vessels on the eye, in the eye, and even around the gums are very, very delicate. And so they will burst if too much pressure is applied to them.
I feel like old blood is coming from my head as we talk of it.
That is wild, man. Just these little details are so vivid.
Yep.
Wow.
We're not sleeping tonight. That's for sure.
Wraps up another fantastic episode with Joseph Scott Morgan. Thank you so much again for being here.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.
Right on. You can listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it.
We'll see you guys next week. Joseph. Adios.
See ya.
Adios.
Bye.